Book session number 13106, Reel 3.
Mr. Needleson, Reel 3.
Yes. The people saw the men from the mink farm, and they were talking about this man, and therefore we had to be more careful. Now, the month of March and April were very eventful for us. We had a few bigger operations, and we had some losses. In March, we blasted a viaduct, to an old viaduct.
Yes.
Yes. And and we had to use a lot of explosive, but destroyed this viaduct and stopped the trains for a long time there. And then I have to tell that our base, our operational base, was a little village called Askov, A-S-K-O-V, Askov. And it was a little village, but it was a well-known place in Denmark, because there was a very old and great folk high school with 300 students and teachers. And some of my group were formerly students at this folk high school, and they lived there. I had a room at the ceiling at a bookseller's and so on, and another man lived at a miller in the little village. So we were all together there. But in the last part of March, the Germans occupied the high school, and all the students had to leave and go home. And instead there came, I think, 200 or 300 German soldiers, and they took over the high school. And therefore we had a difficult time, because we had to stay in this village among all these Germans. But some went to work in the gardens, in the village and so on, and I tried to work in the bookstall, at the booksellers and so on. And in the night we went out to the railway. This village was situated 1 or 1.5 kilometers from the railway, so we of course we couldn't every night go to this section of the railway. We had about 30 kilometers of railway. That was our job to sabotage these 30 kilometers. So very often we used our bicycles in the night and went to different places, and we had a very good derailment very far from our village, in the easternmost part of the our section, and of course we had some, what do we call, fiascos, some fiascos, yes. We went one night very far east to, and we wanted to sabotage the railway out there. But that night there were so many German guards at the down at the railway, and they had big dogs with them, and we were attacked by these dogs. And there was much shooting and so on. So we had to leave the place and find our bicycles and go west again. And that night, I don't know why, but that night there were so many German patrols out in the roads. So we had a great difficulty to get home. And we had to bury our explosives and weapons near a farm. If we would be stopped by the patrols, we couldn't have all this weapons and so on. So we lost much. I lost my bicycle, I remember, and so on. Well, then we came into April, and I told you about these 37 explosions, and I think that was the 8th of April. The 10th or 11th of April, we had planned a greater action again. We had planned to go to a railway station and blow up all the points there, just to stop everything. So we had to go in action, every man, 12 men, and some people had to go to this railway station and be there, and another group, I belonged to the other group, we had to come with all the explosives and so on, the weapons. So late in the afternoon, in the darkness, we went there. But on our way, we passed. We went by a pass through the fields and a little wood and so on, and there we met a couple of German soldiers with their girls. And we had to pass them very close, and then we could see in the darkness that they were taking their rifles down the shoulders, and therefore we attacked them and took the rifles from them and so on, and we took the the things out of the rifles, so they couldn't.
The bolt.
Yes, we took out, and then we told them to go. We couldn't do it. We couldn't shoot them. We were civilized people. So they went, and then we talked about now it's no good, this one. They will go back to the high school, to the company, and they'll tell them there, and they will try to find us. Then our leader said, "I think we had better stop this plan." And our leader knew that at the Vickers home in the village, that night, the headquarters of our region, the resistance movement's region, they were there. And he said, they are in danger. If we have alerted all the Germans there, therefore we had better go home to the Vickers and tell them such and such. So we had a very busy night. The headquarters, the people from the headquarters, they left that night and found another place, and we moved our explosives and our weapons to another place and so on. And then we had planned that if anything happens, if the Germans know that we live here, we'll just go away for a week or so to different places, not to our family but to other people. We called it to go underground. So we thought we had better go underground for a week, and then just come back again, and so on. So we did that. But a few days later, two of my friends there, they would go out and sabotage again, and they used a third man, and they tried to find me, and they couldn't find me because I had gone to another place because of this thing. So they found a third man. So these three men, they took their bicycle the night to the 16th and went east to find a place at the railway to sabotage the railway. As they came close to a crossroad, they could see a group of German soldiers with motorbikes, and they were there. And they said, "Now we had better go back again." But they were the Germans had seen them, and they started their motorbikes, and then they went into a field close to the road, and they found a place where they could lay down. They had to get their weapons out of their. They had some bags. So then the Germans came, and they were much shooting, and they flung hand grenades, and they killed the two of these, and the third man, he was very much wounded. The Germans thought they were dead, all three of them. It's this wounded man, he has told me what happened. And he remembered that a German soldier took his rifle and he cocked the rifle. Yes, and set the muzzle against his head. And then he thought, "Now I'm lost." But he didn't shoot. A little later, the Germans ordered a wagon, just a cart with two horses, to come and get these three bodies. And then they found out that one of them were alive. But he was very, very much wounded. They couldn't interrogate him now. So they took him to this high school they had, where they had the soldiers. And there, in some way, he made contact with the vicar in the village, and the vicar came and had a talk with him. And after that, the Germans took him to a town called Kolding, to the Gestapo. They had a headquarters there, and they wanted to interrogate him there.
Yes.
But they had to get him a little more alive to all his wounds first. And they took his father-in-law. In some way, they knew that his father-in-law lived in this village, and he was arrested too. And he was beaten up by the Germans, by the Gestapos. And we had to just now to go underground again. And I went to and the group was. We had to leave the village. We had no more to do there. We couldn't. There was too many Germans and too much Gestapo and so on. So some of my friends went to the western part of Jutland. They had some connections there, and I went to my brother-in-law. He had a farm down in the eastern part of Jutland, and he has just They had made a group there, a sabotage group there, but they wanted an instructor to teach them the use of the weapons. And so I became the instructor there for the last 3 weeks of the war. And we had great plans of sabotage, but we didn't make it.
Because the war ended.
Yes, yes. And
which part of Eastern Jutland was this?
It was east of a town called Vejle. V-E-J-L-E, 17 kilometers east of Vejle, in another village. And my brother-in-law and my sister had a farm there, and there I lived with them until the war ended. In about these three people, the two killed and the one wounded, the two killed, the Germans took them at night and buried them in a little wood in the neighborhood, and they tried to do it without people could see or hear it. But a man in the neighborhood, he heard they came in the night and buried these two, and therefore he could tell us when the war was ended that they lay there in this wood. And it was in a way strange, because just that little wood was a place we used to gather before we went out. Then the Danish church, what do we call it? They took the bodies up and put them into the
graves.
Into the graves, and the grave was made. The grave was christened, I think you call it. So there they lie now in this little wood, and they have a stone with the inscription and so on. And every fifth year, on the 16th of April, we meet there. But after the war, I think it was no good time. I didn't like the weeks just after the war ended, because we were ordered to arrest Danes who had worked with the Germans and so on. And I didn't like it, because some of the people we had to get and bring to the police stations, they were just small, you know, small people. And one of them, he has just had a German soldier living in his house, and therefore we had to arrest him. And I think that was a little too stupid. And we saw people who didn't fight during the war, but now, well, now they were war heroes.
Claiming to be war heroes.
Yes, and told about all their famous things. And they did some dirty things against girls who had loved German soldiers and so on.
What did they do?
Well, they took the dolls and clip all of the hair off, and they would like to strip them for the clothes and so on.
Did you see them do such things?
Yes, in one time I saw it.
Where did that happen?
It was in my hometown, Boyorp, it's called, in Jutland.
How many girls did they do it to?
I only saw one, but I heard all over the country. I think it happened somewhere. But I personally, I've only seen one time, the one girl.
Did she have a German soldier friend?
Yes, yes, and that was all. That was the only thing she had done. And therefore, I think that it was very good that the war stopped, but I think some people behaved very wrong.
But who did this type of thing to the girls? Was it genuine resistors, or was it...
No, it was just angry people in the town. And I don't think they had very nice national feelings about that. I think they just had some dirty feelings. Well, that's my personal theory.
So their motivation wasn't patriotism?
No, I don't think so. Of course, they said it was, but I don't believe them. But I think that happened all over the world, the Europe.
But who gave you the orders to arrest the collaborators?
They were orders from the leaders of the region. Denmark was divided into six regions, and I belonged to region three. And when I went to my brother-in-law, I think it was region three too, and they had some leaders. And they told us, and they gave us the addresses and say, now you go to this place and this place and this place, and you arrest these people and bring them to the police station in a town called Horsens. And well, we did that, and there was no beating, of course, and so on. We just arrested them, but they were so frightened, and you know, it was just common people, in a way. A shoemaker, I remember, and a farmer, and so on. And we came in our car with weapons and so on, all that. And it was a little too dramatic. And of course, they were frightened. And most of them, I knew, they came out a week or two after. And a few of them had to go to prison for a short time. And why I didn't like it was because it was a small, we called them the small fish, these. But we had some very famous people, high and mighty people, and they didn't go to prison. And they ought to. And I think that's the same story all over the Europe, that we were very busy to get the small ones, and many of the big ones they stayed in their positions, and therefore I didn't like the weeks just after. Of course, there were flags and songs and all that, and joyful people and all that. That's of course. But I was so happy that I could go back to. We were called to the army again in June, so then that was all over. Then I was a common soldier again, and I did like that.
Why did you like soldiering?
Well, I felt I did like to be a soldier, and we had very good comrades, and we were very fit and happy, and we had a very happy summer in 45, and then new recruits were called, and we had to teach them.
In other parts of Europe, there was a lot of tension between resistors of different political persuasions.
That's right, yes.
Say, like communism, non-communists
yes.
in France.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Was there such a thing in the Danish resistance, or were you united?
We were united, and we had groups with both communists and non-communists. They worked together. But the two most famous organizations in Copenhagen, they were the one where I think 90% communists, and the other was I think about 90% non-communist. And as far as I know, they worked together during the war, but just after the war we had the split here between these. I remember that when in April I had to go underground, a man I knew, he asked me, "Well, I understand," he said, you are a saboteur. Can you tell me, I have heard that there are so many communists in the resistance movement, and therefore I don't like it," because he was an anti-communist. And I had to tell him what I thought I knew. I told him, "Well, I don't know any communists in the resistance movement, so I think you don't have to be afraid," because I really didn't know about all the many communists in the resistance movement. As a matter of fact, I knew only a few people personally in the resistance movement. I knew the people in my own group and one or two more, and that was all. It was just after the war I heard and I read about it, and then I knew, of course, there were many communists. And the communists did a very good work in the resistance movement, but just after 1941, because in 40 and 41, they were ordered to be pro-German, you know, until the German attacked Russia.
So, in your resistance group, what kind of political opinions did they have, if any?
They were non-communist, and I think they belonged to different parties. We never spoke politics. But after the war, I think they belonged to the same liberal and conservative parties and so on. I think they did.
Was this person who approached you about communists and the resistance an official of the Danish government, or just a private person?
No, he was just a high school teacher. I happen to know.
But he was frightened of some communist
takeover. He was frightened that the communists would take over, because he had heard that there were so many communists in the regime.